This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. So far, the DNC hasn't lost its momentum or its mojo. Last night, more Democratic A-listers, from Elizabeth Warren to Bill Clinton, electrified the crowd. But did they electrify voters who've been feeling so-so about President Obama's presidency? On the line with me from the DNC to talk about how the convention is reverberating beyond North Carolina is our political contributor, Kevin Peterson. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Callie. I'm happy to be on the show.
So, you've been at every DNC convention since 1988?
Yes. I grew up in Philadelphia as the son of a locally elected official. And since the late 80s, the first, the second convention where Reverend Jesse was part of the party's leadership, I've been going. I think that was in Atlanta. And ever since then, I've been at the DNC conventions. I've been to some Republican conventions also, but this is one more notch in my belt in terms of the DNC conventions. I'm glad to be here.
Well, you're the perfect person to compare then, because everybody said going into this convention for the DNC, no way, aside from the issues that President Obama has in trying to sell his record right now, but there's no way to capture the excitement of his first run because there was so many unique aspects to that first run. And yet, the speeches, particularly last night with President Clinton, were really quite exciting.
This has been a particularly dramatic convention. You're absolutely right. 2008 was simply magic. You had these wonderful first-time opportunities before the country, and the country responded in an overwhelming and an exciting fashion, at least the Democratic Party did. So people were wondering if any of the magic would be left from 2008. Only to be surprised that, in fact, there was magic, beginning with Michelle Obama on Monday night, who talked passionately about why she fell in love with her husband, how she fell in love with him, and how his character translates into future leadership, presidential leadership for the country. And she did it well. The whole city is abuzz. The conventioners, they're abuzz to this day around how well she delivered that message. And so far, she's been the star, only to be followed up by Elizabeth Warren and, of course, Bill Clinton last night. All of the A-listers who showed up to and were asked to perform as a setup to President Obama's nomination performed extraordinarily well. Given their function.
Now, when you're on the floor, because for those of us watching, you know, there's a little bit of a distance, but President Clinton came across very powerfully, even for those of us watching. I'm just trying to get into what was it like on the floor, because people seem to be just losing their minds when he was speaking.
Well, he retains the Southern charm. He retains the charisma that catapulted him to the presidency a couple of decades ago. Last night he combined those two aspects of his personality and his talent as a gifted politician to really rouse up the crowd. At points he was poetic. At points he was mocking of the Republican Party, but more importantly, he became professorial at some point, sort of really instructing the delegates on what he believes are the lies and the mistruths that the Republican Party has been telling about the president. And all of that message he delivered came through the hall with a very visceral and very personal and very tactile and convincing way. And it simply threw the delegates into a hissy, as they say.
Now, here's something that is in the light of day the next day, as and I've not heard many people complain about President Clinton's speech, is all that you said. But it was noted by many that his speech stood alone, not just in his eloquency, his wonkiness, his charm, but in terms of the way that he framed the issues for the Democratic Party and those beyond the Democratic Party, presumably the independents, very much different from an Elizabeth Warren. And Elizabeth Warren said sort of Wall Street's the bad guys. We got to do something different here. President Clinton went down the middle and said there's cooperation that must be had of all of these parties. He barely mentioned social issues. Everybody else on that stage mentioned social issues like gay rights, saying, you know, there should be folks should be allowed to love who they want, etc. So there's been a lot of discussion about whether or not there really is a divide in the Democratic Party, Kevin Peterson, about what it means to be Democratic. Is it the Clinton centrist viewpoint, or is it the Elizabeth Warren going to the left more? Where are those folks on the floor? They seem to respond to both, but.
I was about to say, the Democratic Party post-Obama, if he's reelected, even if he isn't reelected, will face a challenge as to where it should go. Should as you mentioned, should it revert back to a Clintonian triangulation stance where cutting bipartisan deals with Republicans, if that's possible anymore, is the strategy? Or will it move towards a more progressive, more liberal, more pointed, issue-oriented posture, which is the one that, which is the position that Elizabeth Warren personifies in the party right now? I think Clinton spoke to both of those while also really sort of arguing for cooperation within and among parties.
So you're not feeling a tension between the folks who are there, those delegates who are there. You're not feeling a tension.
There's less tension than there is differences in terms of where the party might go. There's been discussion off the floor and in the arena around the differences in the party, but one wouldn't pick up any intra-party ideological tension at this point.
Except for that moment when you guys had to make a decision about putting back into the platform the word God and the word Jerusalem, which we are told was something that President Obama himself asked to happen. There definitely was an awkward moment there.
Those discussions were mostly had not on the floor, but outside of the convention venue where people were sort of scratching their heads around how those positions where God was taken out of the platform and the references to Jerusalem statehood was taken out of the platform. People were scratching their heads around whether those issues might hurt them among the Republicans moving into the thick of the campaign season. But it seems like those items have been resolved and the party just wants to move forward.
Well, I don't know that I would have to say whether it was resolved or not. I mean, it was resolved in a heavy-handed way, not by the delegates, because anybody listening to the vote, and I did it this morning with my eyes closed just to see, you know, is there any way to distinguish?
Yeah, the yeas and the nays were almost about even.
I don't know if they were even. I would say the nays sounded very much stronger than the yeas. And yet, it was clear that the party leadership had said, we're not going down that path. This is what we're going to say happen, and we're moving on. And that's what Antonio Villarosa, who was charged with having to say that 2/3 of the folk here voting said yay. But it's clear that there are some differences going on among the delegates, and it's fair to say the delegates may represent a piece of the electorate of the voters that's not representative of a broad spectrum of people who may or may not support the Democrats fall.
Right.
I'm speaking with Kevin Peterson, founder of the New Democracy Coalition, who is also our political contributor. And Kevin Peterson is at the DNC. This is his latest convention. He's been going since 1988, so he's a good person to talk about the atmosphere in the hall. Back to Elizabeth Warren. As you said, very well received in the hall, what we could see at home, absolutely. She gave rather a nationally focused speech rather than a local one, if I may observe that, somewhat from what Scott Brown has been doing here in Massachusetts. But in addition to that, she woke up this morning to an article again in the New York Times questioning her ethnic claims that she made about being a Native American. Does this mean, if the New York Times picks it up, you know, that's heavy, that this is just not going away? And whether or not she likes it, she's going to have to respond. I'm very curious to know if on the floor where you are you hearing people talk about this?
It hasn't come up, quite frankly. And I've actually, in preparation for this segment, pushed a couple of the Massachusetts delegates and some from Illinois, where I'm staying, the Illinois delegation at the Omni Parker House in Charlotte. And it wasn't resonating as an issue that they felt was current. The Massachusetts delegates, of course, were saying, oh, we've been there, we've pushed past that, we need to focus on Scott Brown and winning the race. And some of the delegates from outside of the state, some were new to the issue, others just thought it was somewhat humorous, and we were fully supportive of or appreciative of the candidate's speech last night, but and also seemed very supportive of her candidacy moving on. So as the New York Times is sort of reviving this story nationally, it will be interesting to see how it plays out locally, where, of course, the issue is most important for candidate Warren.
And we should note that in the New York Times piece, in the past, there's been a great amount of criticism, a lot coming from a partisan side of the argument, where people, for Republicans, I think it's fair to say, continued the message, you know, the drumbeat, if you know, just wanting her to respond and feeling as though she had not given a full response, or has yet to give a full response. But the people quoted in the New York Times article were Native Americans attending the conference, attending the convention. They didn't seem too pleased, Kevin.
Well, because the issue, as far as they're concerned, as far as those other voters in Massachusetts, has not been completely answered by candidate Warren. I recall being on your show some months ago and pushing for suggesting that she resolve this issue as quickly as possible, because it does bear legs just in terms of whether there was truthfulness or there's responsiveness, sensitiveness, responsiveness on behalf of candidate Warren. So I would imagine that she will continue to be dogged by this if she doesn't answer one way or another with some clarity and specificity around evidence relating to her ancestry. But I'm not sure how deeply it will resonate into the rank and file voters in Massachusetts who are not Native American. It just remains to be seen how this is handled. But it's awfully curious as to why there hasn't been a definitive, straightforward response to her claims.
Tonight, everybody's looking forward to hearing from President Obama, but it seems to me, based on the buildup of this week, of these very powerful speeches by Obama surrogates, that he's really got to bring it, as the kids might say. What are you hearing that he is going to emphasize, and what are you hearing from the folks on the floor that they feel he must emphasize?
Well, the overall message of the campaign is moving forward. So what I'm hearing is that he is going to speak to those issues where the country was 4 years ago, at the brink of financial collapse, high unemployment, financial systems breaking down, large corporations breaking down, and now the country is somewhat stabilized. I believe he'll hit on that point, as other surrogates have. And then I believe he'll trumpet his foreign policy successes, particularly the war on terrorism and ending or bringing to a close war and other theaters across the globe. And I believe he'll also emphasize what the Democrats need to be doing over the next 4 years in order to finally, what he believes, finally put America back on the straight track. So folks are looking forward of a fairly optimistic message that trumpets his successes and look forward to us towards the future. And he will have to bring it. We know that he's probably one of the most gifted orators, certainly in the 21st century, but among the most recent presidents, he'll be lauded as one of the better ones. And he'll have to live up to high standards tonight after electrifying deliveries from other party leaders. So we're looking forward to it tonight. One of the disappointing aspects of the convention, you may have heard this, Callie, is that the venue has changed,
right.
where the president was going to speak to 73,000 delegates and supporters because of thunderstorms and the threat of lightning. The venue has been changed back to the arena that has hosted the first two events. So people are somewhat disappointed around that. Certainly some, especially some local people who I've spoken to who served as volunteers on different committees supporting the convention will not be able to see the president in person. So there's a little bit of a pall around that aspect of the delivery that President Obama will make tonight.
All right. Kevin Peterson, founder of the New Democracy Coalition and our political contributor. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We've been getting a live dispatch from the DNC in North Carolina by way of Kevin Peterson, founder of the New Democracy Coalition. Kara Miller's back in Studio 3.
Hey, Kelly, so how many mobile devices do you typically have on you?
One.
Okay, all right. So imagine a world in which everyone is armed with a mobile phone or an iPad or both. We've certainly already seen how mobile technology has brought about change in, say, Egypt. And my guest, Michael Saylor, thinks a lot about that sort of intersection of technology and society. And we're going to talk to him about what this sort of new mobile world order could bring as more and more people acquire tablets and, like you have right here, a cell phone.
All right, more people getting on the grid. I'm Callie Crossley.
And I'm Kara Miller. This is Boston Public Radio.